This is Rabbi Shai Held, Parashat Yitro 5775. Honoring parents, sometimes the hardest mitzvah of all. The fifth of the Ten Commandments reads, Honor, kabed, your father and mother, that you may long endure on the land that the Lord your God is giving to you. Noting that we are commanded to honor both our parents and God, the Talmud concludes that Scripture equates the honor due parents with the honor due to God. And yet the parameters of the obligation are not obvious. What is required by the commandment and what isn't? And perhaps most significantly, what is it about our own time that makes honoring parents at once especially challenging and especially urgent? The Hebrew word for honor, kabed, also means to be heavy, suggesting that what is commanded is for people to give weight to their parents, to regard them as of high value or worth. The commandment's negative counterpart is linguistically parallel. Quote, one who curses, mikalel, his father or his mother, shall be put to death. The Hebrew word for curse or dishonor, kalal, also means to be light. So the thrust of the Torah's teaching is clear. Do not make light of your parents, but give them weight and treat them with appropriate seriousness. Neither Exodus nor Deuteronomy fleshes out precisely what honoring parents requires. Through careful readings of other biblical passages about filial duty, some scholars attempt to construct at least a partial picture. Quote, heed, my son, the discipline of your father, and do not forsake the instruction of your mother, suggests a mandate to adhere to parental teachings. Laws in Parashat Mishpatim make clear that striking or insulting a parent are strongly prohibited. Misappropriating parental property is vigorously condemned. He who robs his father and mother and says it is no offense is a companion to vandals. Moreover, honoring has nuances of caring for and showing affection. In general, Bible scholar Brevard Child notes, the choice of the word honor carries with it a range of connotations far broader than some such term as obey. The Torah's intention is thus to expand the area covered by the commandment as widely as possible. In a related vein, Terence Fredheim suggests that the Torah's use of a wide-ranging verb like honor means that there is no one specific behavior that is commanded. It is an open-ended commandment, inviting children to respond in any way that honors parents. In all dealings with parents, respect, esteem, having regard and concern for, and showing affection, considerateness, and appreciation are the order of the day. Modern scholars disagree over whether honoring parents entails obeying them. Jeffrey Teague, for example, writes that one aspect of honoring is respect, which includes obedience to parents. And Richard Nelson adds that to honor in this context means to submit appropriately to authority. Walter Brueggemann, on the other hand, argues that the command does not advocate obeying or being subordinate. And Terence Fredheim avers that for the Torah, obedience is not at the center of what it means to honor. Still other scholars insist that to pose such a question to the fifth commandment is asking too much of it. Peter Enns, for example, maintains that the Ten Commandments are consistently ambiguous and suggests that this is not just the case for us, but for the ancient Israelites themselves. On Enns' account, the purpose of the Ten Commandments is to reveal to the Israelites a bit of who God is, knowledge that must translate into appropriate behavior on their part. In other words, as glimpses into the nature of God and God's relationship with God's people, the Ten Commandments are not exhaustive pieces of legislation that account for each and every contingency and possibility. They are to be obeyed, but as to how, that is a matter of continual reflection by the Israelites as they continue to live and grow in the shadow of God's love and protection. And yet halakha, Jewish law, always seeks concrete applications, lest divine commands remain at the level of abstraction or even platitude. Accordingly, the sages ask, what is meant by reverence, mora? One should not sit in the parents' place or speak in their presence or contradict their words. What is meant by honor, kibud? One should feed them and give them drink, help them get dressed, welcome them when they come home, and escort them when they go out. Strikingly, nothing is said here about an obligation to obey one's parents. This leaves the interpreter to make a judgment. Does such an obligation not exist in halakha? Or, conversely, is its existence so self-evident that it does not need explicit mention. One thing, at any rate, is clear. Parents cannot demand that their child sin. Commenting on the mandate in Leviticus, "You shall each revere his mother and father and keep my Sabbaths. I, the Lord, am your God," a midrash asks, could it be that if one's father or mother instructed one to transgress one of the commandments in the Torah, one should obey them? That is why Scripture says, "And keep my Sabbaths. You are all obligated to honor me." And indeed, the central code of Jewish law unequivocally insists that if his father told him to violate the words of Torah, whether a positive commandment or a negative one, even of rabbinic status, he should not obey him. A child's sense of how to best fulfill his religious obligations is also enough to override his parents' express wishes. As Rabbi Yosef Karo puts it, if a student wishes to move to another place where he is certain that he will benefit greatly from the rabbis there, and his father forbids him to go because he is worried about possible deeds of idolaters there, he need not abide by his father's wishes. So also, if a person wants to pray in a synagogue where prayers are offered with greater devotion, he may do so against his parents' wishes. One could argue that in such cases, the issue is a conflict between religious obligations, honoring parents on the one hand, and other religious requirements on the other. But a number of Jewish legal sources open the door wider, indicating that parents cannot thwart their child's subjective sense of well-being. Rabbi Moshe Isserles, for example, writes that if a father forbids his son to marry the wife of his choice, the son can disregard his father's instructions. More generally, a parent cannot demand that her children carry her grudges indefinitely. Quote, "If a father commanded his son not to speak to a particular person, nor to forgive him until after a certain time, if the son wishes to make up with that person immediately, despite the father's command, he may disregard the command." In general, some of the most significant medieval rabbinic decisors seem to have held that there is no blanket obligation for a child to obey her parents. Obedience, they argue, is simply not what the Torah means by honor. It is crucial to emphasize this distinction between honor and obedience because relations between parents and children can easily run aground when the two are conflated. Narcissistic parents tend to see their children as mere extensions of their will. When children begin to chafe under that unbearable burden, entire families can begin to unravel. Needless to say, no one emerges from such a process feeling that their dignity is fully intact. All of this points to a more fundamental fact about the Fifth Commandment. The contours of what honor requires in specific situations can be enormously difficult to discern, and fulfilling those obligations can be just as, if not more, difficult. Not surprisingly, a Talmudic sage teaches that the commandment to honor our parents is the most difficult one to fulfill. Yet not being obligated to obey parents does not constitute permission to ignore them. In fact, the commitment not to ignore parents, and as they get older, not to cast them aside, arguably lies at the heart of the Fifth Commandment. Consider the broader context of the mitzvah. The Ten Commandments as a whole are addressed first and foremost to adults rather than children. After all, it would make little sense to admonish children not to covet or commit adultery. Moreover, the Fourth Commandment explicitly requires its hearers to have their own children rest on Shabbat. It would seem, then, that the central concern of the Fifth Commandment is with how grown children treat their parents. Some argue that the mandate to honor parents is, at bottom, a command which protected parents from being driven out of the house or abused after they could no longer work. As Patrick Miller puts it, although the commandment is addressed to persons of any age whose parents are living, it was not primarily directed to children to tell them how to treat their parents, but to adults. This means that this commandment has in mind especially how mature adults are to treat their older or elderly parents. Caring for the frail and infirm can be exhausting and enervating, and the Torah worries about the all-too-human temptation to abandon them. The Fifth Commandment thus focuses on the mature person, no longer under the control of parents, and now probably stronger than they are in every way. It has in mind elderly parents, the weaker and needier members of the relationship, who may be regarded by grown children as unimportant and burdensome. Noting that, on his count of the Ten Commandments, only the fourth and fifth are stated positively, Walter Brueggemann suggests that perhaps this is meant to point to a deep connection between honoring parents and keeping Shabbat. He writes that, quote, "The fifth commandment reflects parents who have, by aging, lost their productive capacity and therefore their social utility. If the circumstance in the command is that the parents have lost social productivity and so are made vulnerable, then it comes close to the Sabbath command that affirms that life does not consist in productivity. Sabbath is a celebration of life beyond and outside productivity." Taken together, then, the obligations to observe Shabbat and honor parents make a powerful and, in our time, urgently important point. Our worth as human beings does not derive from our jobs or from how much we produce, but from the simple fact that we are created in the image of God. In traditional societies, surgeon and writer Atul Gawande has recently observed, it was understood that parents would just keep living in their home, assisted by one or more of the children they'd raised. But in contemporary societies, all of that has changed. Old age and infirmity have gone from being a shared, multi-generational responsibility to a more or less private state, something experienced largely alone or with the aid of doctors and institutions. There are many questions to be answered about just how and why this happened, about how much of it can and should be reversed, and about how that which cannot be reversed can nevertheless be rendered kinder, gentler, and more humane. "Do not cast me off in old age," the psalmist prays. "When my strength fails me, do not forsake me." A midrash imagines King David, to whom tradition assigns authorship of the Psalms, praying, "When I was young, I would go out to battle, and I gave my life for your children. But now that I am old, I have no more strength. And they say, until when will this old man go on living?" How to affirm the dignity of the elderly and ill is an enormous challenge, psychologically, sociologically, and economically. In many ways, we as a society are only at the beginning of a much-needed conversation on care for elders. One religious truth, at least, should serve as a touchstone as we move forward. To take the fifth commandment to heart is to understand that no one should ever be made to feel that we as a society are simply waiting for them to die. Shabbat Shalom.